Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. The show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. Hope you're staying sane. Hope you get your shots. Hope you're being good to one another, and hopefully you've been able to watch some new films, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we will get to the grab-a-pencil portion of the show later on, but there's a couple things I want to start with before I bring in Greg Sorvig, the artistic director of Heartland Films. Heartland Film, singular. But Indie Shorts is happening July 20th through the 25th. So we'll be talking about all the short films and what he's been doing in the last year and a half, last year as well, with the festival and the shorts and his own movie watching experience. But I do want to start with one housekeeping. I wasn't able to mention this on last week's show as a correction, so I apologize. But the documentary I talked about 2 weeks ago, Punk the Capital, about the Washington, D.C. punk scene, that documentary is released by Passion River, not by MVD. So my apologies on that. But regardless of who put it out, it's a really cool documentary and it's worth checking out. So yeah, Punk the Capital from Passion River. So there, make a note of that. And one other cool documentary that came out that I got to watch, I watched this week, from IndiePix, a really cool documentary called Power of Moths. And it's set in a daycare center with children with disabilities who put on plays. And it's a short 40-some-odd-minute picture. This could have gone full length, and I would have been fine with it. But it's watching these kids with different disabilities and challenges as far as putting on a show and seeing a performance and being impressed by the performance, not just the fact that here's these kids with these struggles and they're able to put on a show, but really lovely performances. It talks about the power of theater in everybody, as well as the friendships that you have when you work on a show. I wrote down in a quote, "We force them to live in our space, follow our rules, to find a form so they can live in our space, but in their own way." So if you're a fan of the theater of any way, shape, or form, look for the IndiePix documentary on DVD called Power of Moths. So there you go. Check that out. Okay. As I mentioned, Greg Sorvig, the artistic director of Heartland Film, Indie Shorts is running July 20th through the 25th. I had him in studio. It's always good to have him in studio because there are no short conversations with Greg, I assure you. And anyway, here's Greg to talk about this year's festivities. So how's your year and a half been, Greg?
Oh, not much different than any other year, I would say. But
so, well, and what I liked is this year you were able to do a little spin based on the current environment. With three different ways of experiencing the films this year.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, last year no one knew exactly what was going on. So, a lot of the industry pivoted to virtual festivals online.
Oh yeah.
We also worked with the Tibbs Drive-In. So now this year, everything's been crazy the last few months. It's been very positive with people going back to theaters and stuff too. But when you plan a big event, you can't snap your fingers and make a decision in a week. So we are doing three different things. We're going back to virtual. You can watch all 200 plus films online from July 20th through the 25th for Indie Shorts. We also have some outdoor screenings as well, more kind of like picnic style, bring a chair, hang out. It's going to be a night at the Indianapolis Arts Center, in addition to the Indie Fringe Theater. And then we're going to be at the new, beautiful Living Room Theaters down in Bottle Works. So yeah, something for everybody. Whether however comfortable you are with your movie going experiences, you can. We got you covered.
I guess I want to go back a little bit. The timeline from last year. So, you know, you rest for one day. You watch. Right. I know you. You watch nothing.
Oh, exactly.
And then eventually we'll get to what you've been watching. But and so what happens the day after you do nothing as far as prepping for this year?
Oh, it's funny. So, you know, we expanded. So this is actually our 30th anniversary for Heartland Film.
Congratulations.
So it'll be the 13th. And then so Indie Shorts is essentially we claw machined all the short films into their own event 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we announced the dates, went for it. But really, it's still kind of planning is still one long big festival when it comes down to planning. And then July ends, then we start confirming films for October until your ride hits early September and stuff too. No, but I think there is a sense of relief and accomplishment after a festival is done. But then, yeah, call for entries open up like a month later again for the next year, and we keep going. So it never stops. So, yeah, we're not these hibernating nonprofit arts bears who don't do anything. We kind of keep rolling stuff too. But with it being a pandemic year and everything too, I've been able to actually go outside and not just sit in my basement solely. So that's been pretty nice too.
You got a little color on you. It looks good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. We try to do vacation. I have, you know, still have the American vacation guilt. But we went where we don't like to take vacations, but we went to Michigan for a week over the 4th. So,
do you watch films on vacation? Are you allowed to watch films on vacation?
You know what? I made a point this year to separate and try not to watch anything.
Uh huh.
But, you know, we watched Monsters at Work, the new Disney Pixar show on Disney Plus.
You also have two kids, so that's kind of something
two kids
to do with it. So.
My man JJ was with us, not Abrams, JJ the small bald baby from Cocomelon. Those are the two JJs in my world. Mm-hmm.
Gosh. Okay, so how many submissions this year?
So again, we didn't know with the pandemic what would be affected. Short film's a little bit different. I would say even just taking risks, budgets are a lot lower. So we had 3,300 submissions from around the world. So
wow.
Our record that we've ever had. And then from that, we whittled it down to 201 films.
So you reply to every submission?
So what we do, I think, I wish I had just like a USB reader in my head or something too. I can download all the things. So I think in a perfect world, I could see every film in my position.
Well, sure.
So really, by watching other festival stuff, if things come through the process, we have this system that was developed just for festivals from an ex-Microsoft developer. So we actually have this queue system with mm-hmm. rankings. So as films come up as a pre-screener, as people, anyone who's listening, if you want to be a pre-screener for us, you can actually get an application and watch films. And that's how a lot of people get festival jobs. They
right.
are watching films ahead of time. That's how I got my job with Heartland, too. But yeah, we have pre-screeners watching that films. Films rise up through the process. If we hear about a film here or there, we can look. We have different tags. If people were alumni, I always make sure to at least get my eyes on alumni content and stuff too. But yeah, it's just this huge, I guess, rolling snowball that keeps getting bigger and better and bigger. And I can't watch everything towards the end.
Right. I knew that you had groups on this. How, and then now, of course, congratulations with your Tribeca connection.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was kind of serendipitous a couple of years ago where it's not unusual. I think to be loved by anyone. exactly.
You said it.
Yeah. But it's not unusual for programmers at festivals to work with other festivals as well. And it's this kind of beneficial symbiotic relationship. So basically, and it's different. We're as opposed to us and a lot of festivals having pre-screeners and volunteers watching films. At Tribeca, they have a screening team that are mostly comprised of past filmmakers, other film festival programmers, and such too. So I joined their team on the side. So Heartland is still my main gig, obviously, and still work with Tribeca in their short. So basically, I watched films as a screener, and then I got promoted to an associate programmer this past year, which was great too. So, you know, there's some overlap with films as well.
Sure.
And they're even more competitive with submissions. I think it was over 6,000 this year too. So if I see something through the process and it doesn't make it, because there's a lot more exclusivity with premiere status and other stuff too, then they actually see it. It's a mutual benefit that, hey, this is on my radar. Maybe we can plug it in Indie Shorts or even vice versa. We've actually had a film the 6th of June that premiered Indie Shorts and went on to play Tribeca too. So you never know.
I wondered if there was if there was some process that you were able to bring from Tribeca and bring it here to Indie for Heartland.
Yeah, it's interesting too because
or vice versa maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is it's a exclusively virtual experience with Tribeca, where I watch submissions that are in my queue. So even as an associate programmer, I only watch a small handful of submissions compared to the entire group. Mm-hmm. So there are years where I could watch my entire assigned roster of films, and some of the films, the whole thing, I might have watched, spent all that time, months prepping, maybe not even one or two films from what I watched got in. It's very competitive.
Okay. Now, I know also going through the shorts that there is a new series called It's Been a Year. Is that right?
It's Been a Year, yeah. So, you know, some other film festivals might just do, like, shorts program 1 through 85, where it's maybe there's not, you know, obviously they're paired together for a purpose, but we like, you know, it's hard enough for people, for patrons, to know what to pick, so we do kind of themes. So it's kind of the running joke from programmers, like, oh, God, all these pandemic films, which there are a lot of bad pandemic films. But we did. We thought something might be a little bit more fun, maybe cathartic. And this was actually going to be our first in-theater screening of indie shorts to kind of welcome people back. But, yeah, we have it's a great mix of films. There's a film called Falling in Love in a Pandemic about a guy and a girl who, you know, met online dating, and hey, on a whim, she went to Ireland, and oops, a pandemic hit, so she's stuck in Ireland with this guy she's barely known.
Pandemic version of Leap Year.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, yeah, and then there's some other neat films in that program too, but they're all related to the pandemic, and just kind of a fun way to ease back into the festival.
I wondered, because one of the ones I got to watch was Pickup. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, as I was watching this, it's like, well, when did these, well, they could be a period piece to a certain degree now. But I wonder how, I'm going to be intrigued, or maybe, how do you think the treatment of the last year and a half is going to be used in film as time goes on?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think it's, when you see people with masks, you're obviously going to think about this period,
right,
of a year and a half, 2 years or whatever, too. We don't know what the crystal ball we could be.
That's true.
Where
that's true.
Mexican coming up too, but that film, I think a lot of people are going to want to forget about the pandemic down the road. But I think people making content during the pandemic, that's relative. That's not hit you over the head. And what's neat about Pickup is that it was actually debuted on YouTube with Omeletto, which is a huge resource and channel for short mm-hmm. films. So Feeling Through, that we had last year, through its Oscar campaign, got nominated. It has over 4 million views on that same service. So
nice.
I think this film, that's the whole paradigm is changing with mm-hmm. showing films. This film made its debut in Omeletto on YouTube, but we're the first festival to play it. So it's a little bit, you know, no rules anymore.
Right. And Pickup is basically a two-person show. Mm-hmm. Claire Cooney, of course, directed and is in it. And it's two exes. One picks up the other at an airport.
Mm-hmm.
And they're masked at the beginning, and then they're in the car. And it's great, because I think the description is, then the masks come off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice chemistry between the two actors. And the mask aspect it goes away fairly fast for a 15-minute picture. But
right.
But yeah, it was nicely done. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that. Okay, so what is this year's festival theme, besides It's Been a Year? That's an offshoot, I guess, to a certain degree.
Yeah, every year we kind of have, you know, we have a spokes gnome named Iggy.
How is Iggy doing?
Iggy's great, you know.
Yeah, obligatory mask photos of Iggy last
yeah,
year.
Exactly,
saw that,
yeah.
You know.
So, but, you know, I started my career at Disney, so it's all about storytelling and stuff, too. But, you know, Ingmar Von Hitch Coppola is Iggy's full name, Iggy Shorts for short. We found him wandering new fields when we kicked off the fest.
How's the Schwartzman portion of that?
Yeah.
And the Shires, yeah.
Yeah. So this year's theme is a short escape. So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. We're coming out of the pandemic. Something for everybody, different programs. So, yeah, however you like to experience the fest, come check it out.
Very good. Now, I know there's going to be some familiar faces. The thing about this, friends, is the great thing about short films is take a chance.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, we're seeing films that are not opening in 3,000 screens, and we haven't been seeing trailers for it for a year, year and a half, especially in this case, because everything has been
yeah.
delayed and postponed. So you got a chance to see short films with fresh eyes. But I know some folks want to see name people.
Mm-hmm.
Name drop for us, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one, too, and actually I played Indie Film Fest as well. It's been playing the festival circuit everywhere, but David from Zach Woods. Mm-hmm. And Zach Woods is my celebrity doppelganger. Without fail, the last 3 years, opening, closing, and night, there's somebody who comes up, and it just goes directly, do you know who you look like? You even sound like him. You have that awkward smile, too. It's that Zach Woods guy from Silicon Valley in The Office. So I consider myself the Zach Woods mini-me because I'm not 6'3". I think I'm like 5'7" with shoes on and stuff, too. But anyway, so Zach Woods directs this film, David, starring Will Ferrell. And a lot of these big names, they do these passion projects and they take risks and maybe do things that are not. I know Will Ferrell has kind of done some dramatic stuff here and there.
Oh, yeah.
So it's still a very, awkward comedy, dramedy short. So it's in the Well, This Is Awkward program,
right.
Which, along with some other great films, too. But Will Ferrell plays a serious psychologist who has seen a patient and he gets interrupted through his window by his son. So it kind of goes from there as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a super fun film. I think it was at premiere to Toronto last year, and it's gone through there too. But yeah, super fun film too. Noah Reed from Schitt's Creek is in a film called The Archivist. And we have the U.S. premiere of this film. It's kind of the not-too-distant future. And these group of people are out in the woods, and they find this house with instruments, and they just kind of have this jam session. So this is really kind of unique film, and that's in our Expressions program. And that's a program that kind of art, poetry, without labeling that that
sure.
way, if you will, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some really eclectic, intense films in that collection, so we're excited to have him in there, too. Ben Wishaw, so I'll give a shout-out to Evan Dossi, Mr. Paddington. Because Paddington 3 is in the works. But
Evan is Mr. Paddington 2.
Mm-hmm.
Was a champion of that film. I remember having him on the show to ask if it was a bit, and it's not a bit.
No.
Deadly serious. And I know there's been some teetering at Rotten Tomatoes for those that follow Rotten Tomatoes and its grade. But, we actually bought it earlier this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go, Emma. But, Mr. Paddington. That's good.
Yeah, so, because the one old review, negative review, Paddington 2 leapfrogged Citizen Kane, but didn't it go back?
I'm going to sound really bad. I don't follow.
You know, excuse
I don't
me.
Follow Rotten Tomatoes. Sorry.
Yeah.
Let me get off my high horse.
Oh,
here.
Yeah. But I think it was just kind of funny, too. But if anything, it brought attention to two great films, too.
Yeah.
And after that, it inspired me to watch Citizen Kane on my airplane ride coming back from Tribeca. So as Orson Welles intended on my iPhone... on an airplane, seeing Citizen Kane. So,
I had the pop culture Atticus Finch moment with Emma when she was younger, and I said to her, because my TV at home is not big enough, but I remember saying to her, I don't ever want you to watch a David Lean film on your phone, and she said,
yeah.
Who's that? And I was like, don't sass back,
okay.
Don't talk back to me on that. So,
yeah. Yeah, and then to roll through this really quick,
yeah,
too, I think there's some other names, too. So, like, Riz Ahmed, who was just Oscar-nominated with Sound of Metal.
Sound of Metal is great. And we were actually just talking about that with some friends last week. It's scary. Well, I should say, the drummer, rock drummer, who loses his hearing. And I still think about the moment it happens, because you expect it to happen, and this isn't really a spoiler, you expect it maybe when he's playing or when the sound is at its peak that causes it, but you don't see it coming. And my God, it's still a punch to the head.
Yeah, that's a great film, too. But yeah, going back to Ben Wishaw before we got sidetracked.
Yes, sorry, it's okay.
Too, I'll give that film its due. It's called Misfortunate within our comedy program.
Mm-hmm.
A woman has lost someone in her family, so going through the wills and all that kind of stuff, too. And Ben Wishaw is kind of this guy who is kind of telling her all the legalese behind what you can and can't have. So he kind of has this darkly comedic part within that film, Misfortunate, too.
This is Knives Out 3 audition.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think Jane Goodall's in a film. We have it's always interesting because I know Heartland over the years has gotten the rep. Like, oh, you play a lot of family stuff. Finding quality family stuff is tough.
Yeah.
And we don't have a lot of it. I mean, I'll just be very blunt. But it's
been intriguing to see the evolution of the festival and the brand over the years. Because I remember when showing an R-rated film raised some eyebrows.
I remember when Skateboarding Monkeys were like the opening night film. So, I mean, I've been told that was before my time. No, but I get that. So I think it's kind of fun to look back and see that stuff too. But what we did this year is that, you know, we've tried to do like kids programs and you think that would be a slam dunk, but it's tough with summertime too. I mean, so we did animals this year. We did an animals program that can hit everybody. You don't have to be a kid to enjoy it. But
you mean, you're trying to find films where the animals aren't wearing sunglasses and have rock music playing as
I'm
walking in slow motion.
Exactly. Yeah.
Man.
So, but yeah, I think there's a film called Pant Hoot about a guy who's actually speaks with gorillas, and the movie starts with him, the short film starts with him doing a lot of these different, I guess, like verbal exercises and to imitate what gorillas do and stuff too. So Jane Goodall's in there too. But yeah, we have a handful of familiar faces too. But I found that I love programming shorts even more so than features, because I think with features, you know, people. You go in and you're kind of like, dare to impress me. Like, I have paid for this ticket. I'm here for 90 minutes and I better not be, you know, be scorned in this film or not like something. We're shorts. We're playing some programs, if they're longer, 3, but usually like 7 plus films. So it is like a variety.
Yeah, it is. And you know, one ends and another, you know, if it's not your cup of tea, another one begins.
Yeah.
And you give it another shot.
And that's why it's fun, too, not only pick the films, and even during the process, you might find like an anchor. We definitely want to play this film. This would fit this program. And then there's some that might fit 5 programs. So we are even up to the last week, like shifting these puzzle pieces around, too. But yeah, definitely. So it's fun and taking more risks too.
Very good. All right. I pulled up the page. This is the part of the show I love to do with Greg, where I just throw random titles at him, and he'll say something. That's just what we do.
Do I remember them?
And I didn't say that you did. No, but I actually have animated up here. So
yes.
We have. Let's see. Hitting titles. I'm a pebble.
I'm
France.
A pebble. So the thing, there is a huge.
Do you guys have a map of the globe and the pushpins representing?
We should. That's the weird thing about not being in the office recently. So we don't, you know, usually we have like the schedule, we have post-it notes that are flipping around and going nuts and stuff too. But there's a huge, between schools and just other like main industry, France is a huge creator of animated films, both features and shorts and stuff too. We have a handful, and I'm a Pebble is a great film, beautifully animated, about a young otter trying to find family and stuff, too. And it kind of goes in a direction you don't expect. But, yeah, we became an Oscar qualifier for animated short last year. So we joined this kind of the trifecta club. So only 34 festivals worldwide qualify in all 3. So we did see an uptick in animated submissions.
Sure.
And we have more animated films this year than we've had in the past.
I'm seeing Australia, the Czech Republic, the UK, Canada. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and again, animated films are not just all for kids. I mean,
nope.
I think that's the thing too. I mean, Traces, that won last year, it looked like kind of like the classic cave drawings you think of, like, in France, again, another French film, too. But, like, they came to life, and it has this almost caveman-esque story done through film and mixed media. And that ended up getting shortlisted after winning with us and stuff, too. But, yeah, I think it's not the Oscars every year. It's like, okay, you have a Disney Pixar. You might have a Sony now. You have another cutesy film. You might have two non sequiturs.
I was about to say, two films, one or two films usually from another country that you've never heard of, and you've not heard the film at all. So
exactly. So it's a fun chase. So you know, I've used this term before here, too, but like finding needles in a global haystack. And like it's almost seen. It's not all about the Oscars, but being an Oscar qualifier, it is fun to see. Like I've the last few years I've seen a film through the process. I'm like, that's going to get nominated, if not win.
Nice.
And that's happened 2 years in a row with animated films. And I think I might have put my finger on a couple of horses in the race for this year.
But is there a chart with the Oscar with the films that have been at Heartland with Oscar nominations?
Yeah, so we've had 8 winners and 29 nominees in the past decade,
which
has been pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then I feature films too, which has been pretty neat. But I think, you know, we have our year-round award too. We might have big studio films at the festival in October. But this past year was special because we had 76 days sell to Sheila Evans and MTV out of our festival. Sheila has just been like our best pal and on our jury. She was on the jury again for documentary for shorts and stuff too. But that film got picked up out of Heartland last year. And basically from late October, made an Oscar push and was shortlisted. It just got nominated for an Emmy as well. And then it won a Peabody. So I think the fact that we were able to get this film, because Sheila's prolific, been at HBO for decades. So this is kind of her first big feather in her hat for a feature film, and it came out of Art Fest, which is nuts.
Absolutely. Very cool. Let's shift gears, and how are some of the local films, some of the, or at least one shot in the state?
Yeah, yeah. So we, you know, a few years ago, we instituted the Indiana Spotlight program because we wanted to not only showcase films by Hoosiers, but also put some cash behind it mm-hmm. and celebrate them, too. So actually, we expanded. Last year, we had two programs. We have three. So I think it's 17 films total over three different things. And we have all three of our locations that we have in person this year. So Indianapolis Arts Center, Living Room Theaters, and Indie Fringe will all have Indiana Spotlight programs, too. So it's a lot of fun. It's a fantastic mix. I would say, you know, I'm on the IU Media School alumni board and stuff, too, but I have to give credit where credit is due. Taylor University has actually made some fantastic short films.
Yeah.
They won last year, both the grand prize and student, and they're back with four films this year. Oof. I mean, they do a great job.
Don't they have a small festival of their own? I'm trying
every,
to remember.
Every college technically does.
Okay.
So they, I remember it happened a couple months ago, but yeah, essentially they do like thesis, they give out their own awards and kind of stuff too.
I had an intern here a few years back, and actually one of the things she worked on was the Taylor one. So
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, they do a lot of good stuff. So we're doing that, but again, 38th and Postmodernism features
yeah.
Premium
Hi,
Blend.
Jared.
Yeah, hey Jared. And so the thing that's special about that is that that'll be at Indie Fringe on Saturday the 24th. And the neat thing is that Premium Blend will play a set starting at 7.
You got to see this, friends.
So, I mean, it's going to be a party. So we really wanted to celebrate that.
Nice. And you're also doing the collaboration with Easter Seals?
Yeah, Easter Seals. I mean, it's such an easy partnership. Nick Novicki, who's the head of their Easter Seals Disability Film Challenge, It's an online contest the last couple of years where people with and without disabilities get together to make films. So we're showcasing their winners. And additionally, we are also showing other films with disability-related themes and subjects and stuff too. But then another thing I'll highlight is we have a spotlight on Breakwater Studios. And it's a little unprecedented to feature and give a whole program to one studio, but they kick so much butt that if you're not familiar with the name Breakwater Studios, so Concerto is a Conversation was nominated for an Oscar. Ben Proudfoot was one of the co-producers of that film. And here's the crazy thing. You usually make a film you aspire to make a big fest. They make a lot of documentary shorts with people-driven humanist films that are with New York Times, OpDocs as well, too. But what they do, I mean, it's just almost kind of these almost famous type, forgotten history type projects, and they're all phenomenal. And they premiered films this year, just this year alone, Sundance, South by Southwest, Tribeca, Palm Springs Shorts Fest, and now we have two world premieres, too, at Indie Shorts. So, I mean, you think about Indie Shorts rising up within the ranks of short film festivals. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're the biggest in the Midwest. We have the top cash prizes in North America. I mean, it was a brilliant idea. I'll give credit to our president, Craig Brader, to launch this initiative because we have really kind of come into our own, where I think it's limiting with a feature fest to an extent, but I think the shorts have just, it's gone bonkers. But we're really excited about that. But again, we did this and everyone loved the films. But yeah, there's two new world premieres about a one woman who essentially was not given her due with a Nobel Prize. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Silent Pulse of the Universe. And there's another film as well that features, if you watch the film Spotlight, when Michael Keaton and all of the people within the film are really trying to crack the case, they said, hey, you know, there's a couple of books that have already been written about this. This film, specifically one of these films we're premiering, is about one of those guys who was a survivor who wrote one of those books. So really, he was the person, I think, before Spotlight to really blow the lid off that story. So the film's about him, too. But then there's all these other stories. The Queen of Basketball, which premiered at Tribeca. It won an Oscar qualification at Palm Springs. But it's about this very lively personality. And she was essentially the subject. She was the first woman drafted into the NBA. For the Utah Jazz, and she had this prolific career, and it just goes back down to a couple of decades ago. I mean, everything from being sexism, professionally, you know, the and just the opportunities. And I think that's kind of tragic within the film. Like, well, hey, I mean, WNBA now probably would have been the biggest star ever.
Yep.
And so, I mean, yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, we all kind of focus. We have things in our life that either would have, could have, should have, regrets. So I think these films really give those people their due. So we're excited to have that program Saturday night at Living Room Theaters.
Very good. And you also have the high school film competition.
Yeah, this is the 12th year, I believe, we have it. But
man,
this has been, yeah, again, it was founded by Bob and Allison Spoon Moore, who are great supporters of Heartland, and Bob is on our board of directors and stuff too. But they really want to inspire the next generation of filmmakers. Having been around for so long now, we've had success stories. Carol Nguyen won 2 out of the 3 years she was with us. She's a Canadian-based young filmmaker. Her parents came to Canada from Vietnam, so she did this original film about stop motion about her dad's escape story, which was really cool. But she has essentially gone on, and she won South by Southwest with a film, No Crane at the Dinner Table, that we had at Indie Shorts 2 last year, won our student award. And they pushed that for Oscars. And she was one of the female faces of Toronto, their film festival, the last couple of years. So we were the first festival that she was part of. And she just, comes back. And she was a juror for us this year, too.
It sounds like you guys got a really nice alumni who keep coming. You're a college.
exactly.
As far as filmmakers that keep coming back and helping out.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and it's not unusual for festivals to give alumni free waivers to submit projects and stuff, too. But, yeah, we have a great network of filmmakers who keep coming back. But, again, it's not a golden ticket to get back into. We,
right.
You know, have a great relationship and... But, yeah, we have a great running track record, especially in recent years, of having some great filmmakers.
So where can people go to get tickets and find out all the goodies?
Yeah, indieshorts.org. So, again, I-N-D-Y, you know, play on words with Indianapolis. So indieshorts.org. Like I said, you can check out 33 programs online, kind of a la carte, on-demand style. And, you know, there's so much to look at, but basically just get a ticket for one program and try it out. You can go online, you can see a clip of a film or a trailer or something like that, too. And again, everything is kind of themed based on a certain thing, too. I mean, I love comedy as well, but we have everything, too, for like social justice type films. Again, like the local films, too, comedy. There's one that's all about place, where I think location is really a featured almost subject in the film, too. So we really... There are things that, you know, bread and butter stuff, you know, hey, Indiana films, comedy.
Yep.
But what's fun is to see some of these themes and really dig into the program and see something that just, hey, that I would not have expected that at a film festival. But yeah, indieshorts.org. You can walk up and buy tickets at the venues as well. You can buy packs of tickets you can use in person or whatever. But yeah, again, capacity is limited in person. So definitely get your tickets. So indieshorts.org.
So shifting gears for just a moment, have you been back to a theater?
I have been back to a theater.
What did you break the streak with?
I broke the streak, I think, so I had, what's it called, like your vaccine anniversary or antibody anniversary,
right,
which is 2 weeks after your second dose.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a Pfizer man, so I got the, after 2 weeks, Street Gang was playing at Landmark.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, I was raised on Sesame Street, Jim Henson and stuff, too. My kids, you know, have been watching and stuff, too. So I went to that, and I was the only person in the theater. And it was this really, like, I mean, it sounds cheesy, but I was, like, wanting to cry, a transformative experience. It was really cool to get back and kind of be inspired in the dark with popcorn again, too, in my hand. So,
you know, I'm a
sweet and salty guy. So it was M&M's and popcorn.
Yeah, and you try experimenting with stuff. You're like, okay, let's do a different thing here. And, you know, at home with your popcorn. But, yeah, it was Emma and I broke the – well, we all saw In the Heights. It was like Emma and I saw In the Heights at Landmark. And then I think, like, the next day, Lynn and Emma went and saw In the Heights.
Mm-hmm.
So – we've done In the Heights. We've done I saw F9, but that was just a press screening. It was just us old guys. And and then Summer of Soul.
Mm.
Love Summer of Soul.
I still have not seen that.
Oh, my God. Well, you've been busy. But
And interesting, it's weird because with cycles of film and stuff, too, and the runway release date for a film, you know, things getting picked up quickly from a festival. But then once the plans get in place... I mean, there are films now like the Amazon film with Adam Driver that opened Cannes is going to be available within like a month or two after its release. So typically for us, like at Heartland in October, it's really tough because a lot of foreign films especially don't know what they want to do domestically or in the U.S. So the fact that those runways are so short is crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what have you shown your kids lately?
So it's, you know, I think daughters are 5 and 2. They are not as impressionable as they once were, especially with being 5. So the 2-year-old has a mind of her own. And like I said, back to the JJ factor, Cocomelon. I guess it's a YouTube thing where it's just like, there are all these generic things with like nursery rhymes and stories. Right. And what they do is they can't get creative anymore. So they just use the same melody with new lyrics for new random things. You're like, hey, you didn't really try hard, but congratulations with that public domain restructuring of that song. But we're doing that, like, yeah, Monsters at Work. I'm a huge Monsters, Inc. I've been called the human Mike Wazowski in the past as well.
I've been told I was built like Mike Wazowski. But it's funny you mentioned it, because when Emma was about 2, there were 2 films she could watch every day for 6 months, and it was Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo.
Mm-hmm.
Now, parents... It could be a lot worse. It could be a hell of a lot worse. So I got to know those films very, very well, and I'm very, very thankful because it could have been anything. So
yeah, and we were again those parents where we're like, oh, our kid's gonna get 2 minutes of YouTube time or TV or something too, and now it's like the iPad is your friend. you just need it, okay? Everyone needs, especially again, it's been a year like the program we have. Everyone needs a little TLC and time away and stuff too. But yeah, she, 5-year-old, goes down some YouTube rabbit holes and is still signed into my account. He tried to do some filters and you're like, that's weird. Kids love watching people open things, other kids playing with toys. I think if for some reason I got let go, I think I can make a career out of doing just badly scripted content with my kids, like walking around the house. It's the weirdest thing. Like, kids entertainment on YouTube is
yeah.
Crazy.
It was when we would when we were back at the old building back when we were working on Art of the Matter. This is the old story. And Emma was about 2 or 3, no, 3 or 4, I should say. And I'd have to go into the recording studio, and we would put her at a desk, and we'd go on YouTube. Or no, Google Image. It would be Google Image, mm-hmm. and then we would say pandas, puppies, or kitties, and she'd pick one, you know, type, and that would occupy her for 20, 30 minutes while we were recording. And then her first YouTube obsession was animals on treadmills, and that's kind of, and now she's TikTok. It's funny because she'll share stuff with me, and there'll be that moment where. You know, they introduce some pop culture to you, and you're like, I have no idea who this is.
It's funny. Between that, YouTube, I know there's like phrases and stuff you pick up.
Yeah.
And then kind of going back into daycare and school and stuff too. It's like, I take pictures of her now, and she like throws her head back, arches her back, and puts fingers up like peace signs and does her pose. I'm like, what is that? She goes, rock and roll. So it's like, okay, you got your rock and roll photo pose down. That's cool. But I remember that being so impressionable. I remember playing tag on the playground in first grade and dropping lines from Home Alone. I remember like trying to get like, have you had enough? Or are you thirsty for more? Oh, he's like, hey, that's from Home Alone. I'm like, yes, it was.
and then bringing that around. Emma's the one that reminded me that Mr. Culkin is with Brenda Song, and I'm like, oh, because Emma was a big. Sweet Life is Zach and Cody fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was a moment she saw her in The Social Network. And like, okay, we're we won't mention that.
So I regret not going. So Macaulay Culkin, for all you fans out there, he is or was in a pizza band, meaning all the songs were about pizza.
Okay.
And I think they played the Hi-Fi in Fountain Square.
Really?
And I did not go, and that's going to be one of my
take-it-to-my-grave regrets,
I think.
When did that happen?
I would say 3 years ago,
okay.
If not more.
Yikes.
So every, you know, you Google Macaulay Culkin pizza band, we'll see what happens too. But yeah, that's pretty crazy too. But other stuff too, like I actually went to Tribeca in person, which was, I had all this anxiety of, I wonder what's going to happen, and you know, like going on an airplane again, going to screenings, and everything was outdoors and stuff too. So did that again for outdoor experience at Tribeca, and then. I was there for the grand opening doing kind of MC gig stuff at Living Room Theaters.
Oh.
And Living Room, I mean, the bar is fantastic. May or may not have had a few drinks there from the bartender. And It was exceptional. It was good. So again, Bottleworks has this beautiful Art Deco motif throughout everything, from the hotel, the garage, everything. And it's really well done. They have like unique, like handcrafted or hand-painted murals in there. Mm-hmm. The bar is great. The food's good. Popcorn comes in actual ceramic bowls, so it's not the traditional.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
You got the messy bag of popcorn, and you got a stain on your jeans. And
yeah.
Like, I have these. I only wear one pair of jeans, damn it. Don't make me wash these prematurely. So, yeah, it was great. But, I mean, state-of-the-art stuff there, too, and it's beautiful. So I think we're really excited with their being there, and I think we're going to be there, and I think we're going to be at the Can-Can as well. We shot our awards segment there, too, and we're going to be there for movies after they open in the fall, too, for Heartland International. So, but, yeah, I think living room theaters, again. So everyone's like, are people going to go back to the movies? Like, Indianapolis literally has new experiences. You're not going back to the movies like you have in the past if you go to living room or Can-Can.
There is that. And I think also, when you start with was In the Heights, you had In the Heights, F9,
yeah,
Cruella, Black Widow. Yeah, it's just better on a big screen.
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing too. I mean, it's distractions. I mean, it's like, and it's the sanctity of the experience to an extent too, where I'm going to F around on my phone. And especially with kids and other stuff too. And then, because my early thing when we had kids was, hey, if I can actually stay awake, I will go see a late screening of a movie.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to my pal Taika, but I fell asleep during Thor Ragnarok like 30 minutes in and like woke up at the end like, oh, I played it cool. Not because it was a bad movie. It's just... You know, dad energy, it's different. I mean, you have hopes and dreams.
Oh, yeah.
And especially, I mean, and I don't know if you have this too. You buy, whether it's a Criterion disc or like I have books and it's like, man, yeah, this is going to be my retirement hit list. I'm going to hit all these eventually at some point and it's not going to happen.
I have a stack of films so welcome to the first world problems of this portion of the show.
Yeah.
But on top of the stuff that I bought, I get stuff sent to me. And I'm the guy that I'm going to go through all the special features and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And like I got some stuff from Arrow Video and got to talk about A Ghost Waits, which it's still out there. You should look for that. And then I got the entire series of Laugh-In.
Mm.
Which Time Life had sent me, and I'm like, okay, how am I? Oh, and I did the my twist on it. My pitch was because they had actors, they had movie stars. You know, first it was TV people, especially those like the first season, because it was on NBC. All right, who's got a show on NBC that'll go on Laugh-In? And then when guys like John Wayne showed up, and then they were able to get other movie stars to appear on it. Nowadays, of course, if you're a film actor and you appear on something, anything, you have to plug it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then you didn't have to as much.
Yeah.
So what film would they be publicizing if they were, you know, for appearing on Laugh-In? And man, like Tony Curtis was on in 1968 and they made so many jokes at the expense of the Boston Strangler. Like, wow.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
Well, hey, whatever works, whatever it takes, you know. But, you know, so anyway, stuff like that. So I finally finished that. And then a certain bookstore has a certain sale going on with a certain Criterion. And I kind of bought a couple of those, When We Were Kings and Town Bloody Hall. And those are fun to watch. And so anyway, it's a never ending process. But yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to finish the pile of stuff that I've not, you know, I bought but haven't watched yet.
Yeah. So are those sales the same in terms of calendar timing every year?
I actually have to write this down and figure that out.
I do the same thing. Where it feels they do a great job of marketing feeling exclusive.
Yeah.
I think their website, they do a 50 off sale twice a year, and then Barnes & Noble does it.
Barnes & Noble does it twice a year.
Sorry, I mentioned their name.
No, it's fine. Barnes & Noble, no, it's true, really. Border. No, but Barnes & Noble, does it twice a year.
Walden Books.
And Criterion does it twice a year. And then there's the 24-hour flash ones. I'm like, damn it, man, don't do that to me.
Yeah, I have – there's been so many times where I have, like, a big box set in my cart, and then it comes back to a conversation like, I'm never going to watch this. But then again, if it's, like, post-apocalyptic, happen to have electricity, I have a Blu-ray player somehow.
I had to finish the Bergman set.
Exactly.
That's
what I've been trying to get. And it's like, oh, I've always gotten cold feet.
Well, what was great about that one And that took a year and a half. And a part of it was I didn't have an assignment per se. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got it half off, and which kind of helps. But it's curated. So mm-hmm. it's not in chronological order mm-hmm. like the Fellini one. Now, I enjoyed the Fellini one. It was also smaller, also half off. But you know, it goes, there's ebbs and flows. Because yeah. I think if you were to start Bergman chronologically, it's a little rough because mm-hmm. you have his early or the stuff that he didn't direct or stuff that he directed and didn't write, and it's not until like Smiles on a Summer Night and Wild Strawberries that it you know the Bergman that we know kind of comes yeah. into play, and yes, I'll be on Medium Cool to eventually talk about Scenes from a Marriage. We'll get there, but yeah, and but that one was there was just so many of his films that I had not seen mm-hmm. so. But yeah, that's a completist in me. Now, if Criterion would put out the Kurosawa thing on Blu-ray, I'd be very, very happy.
Mm-hmm.
On top of my usual request list of titles that mm-hmm. I'm sure they berate. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, keep at it.
Yeah.
keep chipping away at the pile.
I'll keep trying. Yeah, I think I've been more successful with TV. Like, I Think You Should Leave. New season is on
right.
Netflix. So I only got to watch like the first episode and it was just as bonkers as season one.
Do you have stuff that you can watch with your wife and yourself or and as a quartet?
See, if there's like, the viewing solar eclipse happens where you can actually agree on stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, because we take turns putting our 5-year-old to bed, and I'd say 75% of the time you just fall asleep in there either all night or until like
right.
3 a.m. we get up and go to our bedroom or whatever and stuff too. So... when I went to Tribeca, I'm still haven't forgiven her, but she finished The Mayor of Easttown without me. We'll have to have some conversations.
Scenes from a Marriage. Wow.
Marriage Story. Mayor of Easttown edition. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. There's ones that, Lynn and Emma will watch and Emma and I will watch. And then we've actually been pretty strict on, okay, we're what, like Northern Exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I own it on disc. Come at me.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned, and everybody's, where is it? No, you have to actually, sometimes you have to actually go out and get it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one we will watch as a trio.
Oh, cool.
I
may have fond memories watching Northern Exposure as a kid.
Love it.
And I probably shouldn't have, but.
No, it's fine. And, I can't remember what those two will watch. But early, about 3-4 months into the pandemic, they finished The West Wing.
Mm.
Emma, she's 19. Love The West Wing.
Mm-hmm.
So Emma and I are going through Veep.
We're in
season 2 of Veep. And she's on her third run of Mad Men.
Oh, third run.
Because it was her first grown-up series that she liked at 12. So she loved the look and the costumes mm-hmm. and the designs. And John Hamm.
Yep.
And then she watched it again at 17. And I remember her saying, God, I picked up a lot more this time around. I said, I'm sure you did.
Yeah.
And then and now she's going through it once more. We're on the final season. So
I keep going back and rewatching The Mandalorian, I think.
Really?
Season 1 and season 2. Yeah. And just like a true fanboy, you know, just filling the gap of not having new stuff with just watching the old stuff again, too. But, no, I love that show so much. And I think even going back and watching the pilot, the first episode, mm-hmm. One of my favorite just first episodes of anything.
Anything?
Yeah.
Right out of the gate. Get your spaghetti westerns back.
Exactly, yeah. And then, because the cool thing, too, and not a lot of people know this, but I think three people are really in the Mandalorian suit, the armor.
Right.
And Brendan Wayne, who does a lot of the gunslinging and more of the general shots, mm-hmm. is John Wayne's grandson.
That's right.
And so it's kind of cool that there is this gunslinger motif that Favreau and Filoni have developed for the show. So it's kind of cool having, John Wayne's descendant there.
Does the 5-year-old watch it with you?
It's funny. You know what? It's those geniuses at Disney, with Grogu and, the child or whatever and stuff too. There's some stuff that it's really funny. And that's kind of the funny thing with my wife, too, is like, oh, they can't watch that. But then, like, here's Avatar. Have fun with Avatar. And they're like,
oh, God.
Star Wars. But that's the thing is, like, a 5-year-old, oh, it's a giant blue creature.
Yeah, it's a giant blue thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not, you could say Dances with Smurfs, but they're not going to get it.
But actually, you know what? Avatar, I mean, there's a lot of swearing and obviously violence in Avatar, but we watched Goonies for the first time.
Hey, oh, yeah, Sky
and
Point, Richard Donner.
We were joking. I was joking with Dave Windisch from the aircraft.
Yeah.
And he was saying that he gets a lot of complaints from people because I think it's like the Mandela effect. You think, like, oh, this is a wholesome kids' movie. There's a lot of swearing and stuff in that movie. So it was kind of funny. So, like, when they say something, you know, our strategy is something comes up in a film or a word starts, so we just say something really quick to our kids, like, oh, hey, it's like, how was dinner tonight? Or, yeah.
There was the moment when Emma was at her Hannah Montana height of fandom in her single digits, and she came to me and said, there's something in the show, it looked like one of your movies. And I said, one of my movies? And what do you mean? And she goes, and it was a squirt gun fight. But it was done with the music, with the kind of Ennio Morricone-like music and the close-ups. And I said, and she described it to me. I went, yeah, that's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And what every film dad wants to hear, do you own it?
Oh.
Yeah, I do. Can I watch it? And I almost burst into tears. And it was a Sunday morning. I ran downstairs. And I remember my wife was still asleep. And we got through the first 2 hours of it. And then went back to it later that day. And then she grabbed my Man With No Name trilogy on DVD and took it up to her room. So
I'm excited for that.
That's going to happen for you.
I'm excited.
So the kids are going to see something that reminds them of something. And then you're able to share.
Yeah, that'll be pretty exciting, too. But I think the funny thing, though, is, too, I think we watched some other stuff, too. And actually, my first Star Wars movie was an Ewoks movie. Like, I was born in 84, so I was in the dark period.
Right.
So, like, I saw one of the bad Ewoks movies with, like, Wilford Brimley and stuff, too. It was one of my first foray into Star Wars. So that was kind of funny, too. But, yes, it's interesting to see. But she actually, she knows what buttons to push, my 5-year-old. And she'll do this thing. She'll come to me and goes, hey, Daddy, I don't like Star Wars. Like, I don't like Star Wars today.
Oh.
I'm like, well, you better shape up. And then but she knows. It's kind of like a fun game that we play.
Okay.
But she knows.
How much it means to you.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I have all the toys in the basement, too. And she's like, Daddy, when can we open these? Never.
Never.
But I
do you want to go to school? Do you want to go to college?
Exactly.
Yeah, I refer to the stuff as slacker savings bonds. Like, or more than one occasion, I'll be in the basement with the collection and go, to quote Monty Python and the Holy Grail, one day, Emma, all this will be yours.
Because
so excited.
Oh, because, yeah, with the pandemic, collecting has kind of gone up a notch with a lot of people. And,
a little bit.
And stuff, too. So same with me. But my wife gave me the, hey, we're getting the carpets cleaned. I'm like, oh. I think it's just that moment of dread because I knew I'm going to have to clean up this basement room where I keep a lot of my junk. Because it's funny. It's like, oh, I would love to have a display room. And my wife was like, well, you know, when the girls move out, you can do that. I'm like, well, clock's ticking 15 years. I mean, that's not.
Well, last year, so earlier this year, we had a friend of Emma's stay with us for a while because both kids were supposed to be at their respective college. And so we moved half the basement to one side. So this is where the music and the movies live, friends.
Yeah.
And converted half the basement into a dorm. So they wouldn't feel like 13-year high school students. But, man, moving that stuff is, oh, boy. And everything's back. And so my lovely wife, Lynn, she lets me call her Mrs. Sosie on the radio, has done the has alluded a couple times of you're eventually going to have to do something about these. You know, like sell them or give them away or something like that. And I'm like,
oh, yeah. And I'm, you know, and I
like hell.
Yeah, I'm a collector and I have so many books. And it's like, well, I guess I don't need 14 Three Stooges biographies. I can get rid of two of them.
Do you, though? What, do you need to get rid of them?
Exactly. That's the thing. So, like, I think I gave up, like, a Larry biography and something else, too. And then you go to Half Price Books and you're like, oh, I got 18 cents for. But again, you have to get rid of some stuff, according to my wife.
And my wife.
Yeah.
We'll get
but it's
there.
Tough. But again, it's that. Because here's the thing, too. Like, I used to, rip discs from Netflix back in the day.
I don't know what that is. I don't know.
Yeah. Again, so I mean, yeah. Obviously now that doesn't matter too, but like, let's just say I got rid of a lot of stuff that I thought was going to be like my treasure trove for years.
Right. And, yeah. And I think our goal is we want to be Burgess Meredith in the Twilight Zone without our glasses breaking or going deaf. So we're set. I mean, we're absolutely set. Yeah. We got all the time in the world.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of the latest. But yeah, it's been fun to talk indie shorts, and I'm excited to be in front of people again. We saw some you know Heartland patrons at that event at Living Room Theaters for their grand opening, and it was good to see people again. So yeah, I'm excited. So hopefully, listeners, you can come on out again. But that's been neat too, going virtual, is that there's not a geo fence for most of the programs. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, people can watch these films worldwide.
Actually, we'll wrap up with this. Mm-hmm. So are you able to record or tabulate the number of hits that a film can be? And also where, which seems a little Orwellian, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's tracking now for everything, which is kind of crazy. You can see, like, I guess if people watch an entire program... I guess from like a marketing and like, I guess patron type dream, you can see like, hey, if Billy bought tickets to this, they'd probably like to get tickets to this or something too. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, it can get a little creepy, in that regard and stuff too. But yeah, but what we do, we treat it like an actual, so it's not like an unlimited. It's not like you were just throwing your film on YouTube. We have, and that was the thing that was kind of the godsend last year. It was like especially with studio films and filmmakers who were very hesitant. I mean, protection is a big thing, and piracy and stuff too. So, I mean, Eventive, the platform we use, there's a handful, but Eventive has really become like the industry leader. A lot of, you know, big festivals use them as well online, but they have DRM protections. It can go down to like crazy stuff with forensic watermarking and stuff too. So, like when we played Minari with A24 last year, I mean, it was like we needed to make sure we had every bell and whistle ready to go for
every
them too.
Dot, every top, every line cross, every
And so I think there are some people would argue like, oh well, so, you know, the film's technically playing in Vermont or something, like you totally ruined his chances to play in Vermont. We're like, well, not really.
No.
I mean, because even Indianapolis, I mean, that's the thing too. I mean, we've been around for 3 decades now. It's our 30th anniversary this year, but doesn't mean everyone in Indianapolis has seen the films. Like, so I think that's the thing too. So we still have a threshold for film, so it's just like a theater. Like, only so many people can get in. So that's how we work with filmmakers, and we do that too. And especially if a film can be played internationally, shorts, we can do that. For features, I think the new common thing is just to keep it within the U.S. Mm-hmm. So that'll probably happen in October and stuff too. But yeah, if these international filmmakers physically can't come because they can't cross the border, like even Toronto for the Toronto Film Festival, it technically still can't go across the border. So it's going to be interesting.
They've not deemed it essential travel yet?
No, not yet, too. I did the thing, too. I filled out, like, the Canadian website, like, hey, I'm doing this and that. And they're like, yeah, you could show up, but we can't guarantee you. I'm like, I don't want to take that risk. But it's great for international filmmakers to have their film and to be able to share it with people. It's a labor of love virtually, too. So, yeah, we saw that, too. So it's not just... You know, we're not just a regional film festival anymore. We are reaching out. And, like, when we had Minari, the trailer hit, it went nuts. And we were one of two places in the entire world that had it available. So that was kind of neat to be put on the map there, too. So, yeah, changing paradigm, but it's pretty exciting, and we've been fortunate to navigate it. And not, you know, taking too crazy of hits. You know, we're coming out of the pandemic in a pretty good spot.
Good. Plug the festival once more. Where can people go for tickets and know all the information?
Yeah, Indie Shorts International Film Festival, presented by Heartland Film, or just Indie Shorts. IndieShorts.org, INDY. And it'll be July 20th through the 25th, so it starts Tuesday and goes through Sunday. And, you know, if you want to take a chance, Friday night at the Indianapolis Arts Center, we're playing two programs, our award winners. So if you want to see the top films that have been now deemed Oscar qualifiers, you can see it there under the stars at the Indianapolis Arts Center, Indiana Spotlight Program as well. But yeah, like I said, it can seem cumbersome. Just buy a ticket to one program, check it out. As short, you can take a risk and have some fun. So hopefully we'll see you there.
Greg, always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Happy hoarding.
Thanks.
That's Greg Sorvig, the artistic director of Heartland Film. Indie Shorts. That's happening July 20th through the 25th. Go check out their website. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, before we get to what else is playing around the state and the grab a pencil portion of the show, we're going to raise a glass to a couple dead people we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And actor Charles Robinson passed away earlier this week. Of course, best known as Mac on Night Court, a favorite show of mine growing up. But it's interesting to see, and he was constantly working. Actually, both of these guys, longtime hardworking guys. But we going back to his film career before Night Court, some stuff I forgot he was in and others, well. And the fun story was I got to meet him briefly at a Heartland Film Festival gathering many years ago, and I didn't have the gumption to bring up the Black Gestapo. So minor pop culture nerd, I wish. Wish I had that moment back. Anyway, his first film was playing Jollop, as in Jalopy, in 1971's Drive, He Said. Of course, played the character of Fabulous in Sugar Hill. Abdul, we got to get that movie going. Of course, he played Colonel Koja in The Black Gestapo. That's a film to see. That's from 1975, and man, it shows. McAllister in Grey Lady Down, an uncredited moment in Apocalypse Now. Lots of TV, of course, but shows like Flamingo Road and Buffalo Bill. He was in The River, the Sissy Spacek, Mel Gibson farm film of those three. Film versions of Malevolence and Beowulf, of course, Home Improvement, The Players' Court, and lots of TV, man. Hot scrolling here at WFYI on Film Sociology. Mercy Street, The House Bunny, and kept working all the way up until, gosh, he had a couple things already in the can. So salute to Charles Robinson. Funny, and loved him on Night Court, and interesting career as well when it comes to TV and movies. And we also raise a glass to that guy, tough guy, William Smith, who passed away last week. Credits go, but he was a child extra going all the way back to the 1940s as one of the village boys, not the village people, in The Ghost of Frankenstein from 1942. Also appeared in Song of Bernadette, uncredited, Going My Way, Meet Me in St. Louis, Tree Grows in Brooklyn, Gilda. Started doing some film, of course, jumped back and forth as well from TV to movies. Films like Mail Order Bride from 1964, The Banditos from 1968, Run Angel Run, The Losers, Angels Die Hard, CC and Company, Summertime, Chrome and Hot Leather. Yes, he's listed as hysterical condemned man in 1972's The Thing with Two Heads. Another film, Abdul, you and I got to host, was in, played Brenner in Hammer with Fred Williamson in 1972, Sweet Jesus Preacher Man, Invasion of the B-Girls, The Last American Hero, Police Woman, Black Samson, Boss, the Fred Williamson film, I can't say the rest of the title, Piranha, not that Piranha, the other Piranha, The Ultimate Warrior, that's the Yul Brynner film, Swinging Barmaids, Scorchy. A couple of things he's probably Twilight's Last Gleaming that he's best known for. He played Falconetti in the TV miniseries Rich Man, Poor Man, and played Jack Wilson. He played Clint Eastwood's big opponent in Any Which Way You Can in 1980. Also played Conan's father. Yes, he was Arnold Schwarzenegger's father in Conan the Barbarian from 1982, and was in both of the Francis Coppola, S.E. Hinton films. He played the store clerk at the end of The Outsiders and Patterson the Cop in Rumblefish. Red Dawn, The Mean Season, Fever Pitch, that's the Ryan O'Neill movie. Eye of the Tiger, Bulletproof, Maniac Cop, Hell Comes the Frog Town, Emperor of the Bronx, The Rollerblade 7, Cybernator, American Me, Last Legend of the Rollerblade 7, Return of the Rollerblade, you see where we're going there, Interview with a Zombie, Warriors of the Apocalypse, and much, much more. So salute to William Smith. All right, let us see what's happening over at the drive-ins, over at the Tibbs on Screen 1, Space Jam, A New Legacy, and Scoob, sure. Screen 2, F9, and The Forever Purge. Screen 3, All Black Widow, All the Time. Screen 4, Escape Room 2, and Pig. That's over at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline this weekend, Black Widow and Cruella. And mark your calendars on Wednesday, July 28th, Spookies and Sorority Babes in the Slimeball Bowl-a-rama. That is happening at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville at the Historic Artcraft Theater, 2 and 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday this weekend, The Secret Garden, because of their big garden walk. The Little Rascals on Tuesday, July 20th at 10 a.m. That's the 90s film. And then Friday and Saturday, July 23rd and 24th at 2 and 7:30 p.m. from 1951, Ma and Pa Kettle Back on the Farm. It's happening at the Historic Artcraft Theater in Franklin. And mark your calendars at the Can-Can as part of their outdoor series. On July 29th, they're showing Juno. So make a note of all of those. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, friends, grab a pencil. Let's get to what you have been watching over the last week. We start with, I'm scrolling here. Tony writes, Take Shelter, an impressive psychological drama. I'm with you on that. Oh, heck yeah, wrote Black Widow, fun and breezy, no sudden move, interesting with lots of twists, camera lens choice was off-putting during every pan shot. I can't read that. Sorry, you're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I'm stalling, my God. Allison writes, A Quiet Place 2, first time in a theater since March of 2020, Fear Street 1978, and The Ring from 2002, and then adds, I guess I'm on a bit of a horror kick. That's all right. Dan writes, The Capote Williams documentary, trying to decide if it really had anything to offer those with a passing familiarity with them. All right, let us know, Dan. Steve writes, Black Widow, after 1.5 years without seeing a feature film in a theater, this summer blockbuster was a fitting, fun, fast-paced finale, as well as prequel, for Marvel's doomed Avenger, and no Tony Stark in sight. Thank you, Steve. And that's over on Twitter. We go to Facebook, and we start with Steve, who writes, Independence Day and America the Motion Picture. Khalif writes, The Five Bloods, highly recommended. Okay. Dee Dee Sorvino writes, Xanadu, because I was a guest on her show, her podcast, Drinks with Dee Dee, which is on Apple Podcasts. But yeah, Xanadu, sure. Glenn writes, Black Widow. Jose writes, Summer of Soul. Dylan writes, last night we watched 20 Million Miles to Earth and Deadly Prey at our monthly screenings at Coal Yard Coffee. That's right. They do have that over there. So, yeah, check out the code to the social media for Coal Yard Coffee and find out about their screenings happening over there. Jeffrey writes, Zola, surprisingly good art film. Adam writes, 2010. Jamie writes, Fear Street, 1994. Andy writes, saw In the Heights on the big screen. I think it was far better than watching it on HBO Max. I'm with you on that, Andy. That's just in general. Devin writes, Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar. Dickie Roberts, former child star. Hey, poet. The Peanuts movie, In the Heights, and Who Are You, Charlie Brown. Christian writes, My Cousin Vinny and Black Widow. Eric writes, Both Deadpools. Joshua writes, Fear Street Part 2 and a return to the theater to see Black Widow with the family. Congrats, Josh. Welcome back. Andrea writes, Whiplash. Such a powerfully disturbing story, she adds. And, of course, I always call it Fame Meets Full Metal Jacket. Ray writes, Summer of Soul. Katie writes, Pitch Perfect, and Sorry I'm Not Sorry. No one says you have to be. Mary writes, The Seventh Seal and Grotesque. Lou Harry, Settlers, Lilium, from 1930, The Wild Geese, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, and 1960s television versions of The Fantastics and Damn Yankees, and then Dreamgirls. David writes, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, The Tomorrow War, Nacho Libre, first four episodes of Loki, Monsters at Work, episodes 1 through 3, and Summer of Soul. Megan writes, Black Widow. Friend said her shoulders were tense from the nonstop action. Okay, well, how were your shoulders, Megan? That's rhetorical. Joan asks, writes, I watched Vice and the Four Seasons. Ah. Channing writes, Nudist Colony of the Dead. Thank you. Carrie writes, Spies of Warsaw series and PBS documentary from 1964. Stephen writes, went on an early Katharine Hepburn binge with Sylvia Scarlett and Morning Glory. Then last night watched Jan Eggleston's incredibly faithful film adaptation of the Lanford Wilson play Lemon Sky. Thank you, Stephen. And happy 5th of July to everybody when it happened on July 5th. Kim writes, suddenly last summer, Miracle at Morgan's Creek, and possibly the worst Western ever, More Dead Than Alive. Lee writes, Summer of Soul, highly recommended. Also, the DVD of the opera Genufa. Very cool. Kim writes, Supernova and Food Club. David writes, Patton. Missy writes, Black Widow, Loki, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, as well as On Point. Britt writes, This Means War, See No Evil, Hear No Evil, and The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. Andy writes, Good on Paper. Todd writes, The musical version of The Women. It's called The Opposite Sex. Do not recommend. Okay. Chris writes, After a few weeks without much movie time, I got to catch up a little. First Cow, Winnipeg, and News of the World. Not to mention the fabulous Summer of Soul. Great week for movies. Very good. Bethany writes, I saw Black Widow, my first time in a movie theater in over a year and a half, and I loved it. David writes, Boogie Nights. Eric writes, his rewatches are Get Carter, The Four Feathers, and his first time screenings, Frank Sinatra in The Detective, and Ethan Hawke in The Good Lord Bird. Thank you. Doug writes, Sunny, The Prize Fighter and Lady, Million Dollar Mermaid, The Opposite Sex, Bon Voyage, The Chapman Report, Gay Paris, and The Four Seasons. Ah, I know a couple films that have been streaming, apparently. I remember seeing The Four Seasons in the theater with my dad back when I was 11. My introduction to Bess Armstrong. Thank you much. Dave writes The Tomorrow War and quite a few indie shorts. Thank you, Dave. Chris Lloyd writes Roadrunner, a film about Anthony Bourdain. That, of course, opened this weekend. The Boys in Red Hats, 6:45, and a whole bunch of indie shorts. Sean writes The Tomorrow War and rewatch Beverly Hills Cop and Trading Places. Mel writes Hook. Dustin writes Pride and Prejudice from 1940. Chimes at Midnight. Hey, Falstaff. Clockwork Orange and the 2001 TV movie Boycott. Mario writes Ad Astra and Trainspotting. Emily writes, I finally saw In the Heights and it was stunning. John writes Becky. And then writes, Becky kicks some white supremacist butt. That's right, John. Nancy writes, Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. So weird and fantastic. James writes, WandaVision. Series, not a film, but since it ties into the adventure films, I include it. Okay, James. Censor and The Lover of Monsters. Alan writes, The Cleaner. Chad writes, Gunpowder, Milkshake, and The Night comes for Us. Kathy writes, Rosemary's Baby. Taylor writes, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, two versions of Murder on the Orient Express, Patton, Madame Claude, The Outlaw Josie Wales, and The Friends of Eddie Coyle. Oh, I love The Friends of Eddie Coyle. Great crime drama. Megan writes, I watched Barb and Star, which was really, really dumb and an enormous waste of time. But more importantly, I was able to watch several episodes of Murphy Brown on my flight home from California last weekend. I can't quite describe how much I loved it. I remember liking it as a kid, but now, wow. I can't wait till it gets released someday to stream. And it holds up. It is that good. Well, thank you, Megan. Rachel writes, Spooks Run Wild, Bowery Blitz, The Pride of the Bowery, and The Princess and the Pirate. Daniel writes, The Big Picture, The Brady Bunch, The Movie, French Exit, Georgetown, The Human Factor, The Big Sleep, Adventure in Manhattan, Funny Face, and The Devil Wears Prada. Steph writes Mothra. Jeff writes The Big Clock and Riddled with Deceit, a Martha's Vineyard mystery, and then informs me in parentheses, Hallmark mystery movie. I actually knew that. Stephanie writes Nightcrawler. Jeff writes one of Spielberg's best and least known, except it's not Spielberg, it's Scorsese, Kundun. Kurt writes, we did The Two Popes and Chicago at Belle Trace this week. This coming Saturday, our film will be Breach, the FBI mole story. On my own, I watched Local Hero again. Nothing wrong with watching Local Hero again. Rachel writes, Black Widow. Michael writes, to Tomorrow War, No Sudden Move, America the Motion Picture, Prime Cut, and Summer of Soul, which Michael deemed really good. Terry writes, Blowout, What Happened Was, and Clash by Night. Jared writes, Black Widow. Joellen writes, I know it's not a movie, but I finished season 7 of Botch. Joe writes, Pleasantville on TMC. Howell writes, Morons from Outer Space, best viewed after several beers. Brian writes, I have tickets to see Black Widow this weekend. I watched Tomorrow War earlier this week. Robert Muggy writes, Howard Hawks' Scarface, Pierre LeFou, The Long Good Friday, Bad Day at Black Rock, Body Heat, The Big Sleep, and Putney Swope. Salute to Robert Downey Sr. Kevin writes, Adaptation. Gary writes, Avengers Endgame, Alien Resurrection, The Original Ghostbusters, The Loneliest Whale, Veer Zara, Aina, and Hum Tum. Mulvine writes, The Father. Anthony Hopkins is nothing short of amazing. Meg writes, Rewatch The Mummy and The Mummy Returns. Addled Fear is enough to help me get over the horrifying CGI in Returns. I understand that. RJ writes, The Pelican Brief. Polly writes, Dr. Death on Peacock, Frailty with Matthew McConaughey, Vintage Must See, and The Cosmic Hoax on YouTube, produced by Dr. Stephen Greer and others. And finally, Kathy writes, Summer of Soul. And there you are, friends. So that's what you've been watching. I hope you got some ideas as far as films to watch, and hope you're being able to fall back on old favorites, as well as watching new, or at least new to you, movies there. And hopefully it's good to hear folks are still slowly getting back into the movie theaters. So far, it's been where I've been as far as screenings have been safe and pretty cool. So there you go. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. I got a few late entries. Can you tell I'm recording the show? a few more. Grab your pencil again. Sam Watermeyer writes, Fear Street Part 2, 1978, Frailty, Cyber Seduction, His Secret Life, Superbad, and RoboCop. Kane writes, Bakery in Brooklyn. Austin Glidden, that's, of course, the Medium Cool podcast. Fallen Angels, The House That Jack Built. Oh, man. Eyes of Laura Mars, Black River, Pale Flower, Ghost in the Shell, A Face in the Crowd, and RoboCop. Kurt writes, Urban Cowboy for the first time. Jordan writes, this week I watched Chungking Express and Fallen Angels. Also, I've been on a bit of an Ingmar Bergman kick recently. I watched The Virgin Spring and Through a Glass Darkly. Well, thank you, Jordan. You listened to Medium Cool. Appreciate that. All right. So you got plenty of titles. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And we'll try again next week. And don't forget Indie Shorts, July 20th through the 25th. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!